So as part of our series on Mitzvos Bein Adam L'Chaveiro, I'd like to give an introduction to the next major topic that we want to discuss, because there are many, many topics that we haven't finished yet. And we'll come back to them, B'li Neder, especially in the midst of Tztaka, where we started. But I would like to introduce tonight the subject of dating and marriage, and specifically the need to check, as I call it, which means that there's a relationship here between... what do you say?
I thought it was going to be about bugs.
Bugs. No, this is not about bugs. Hopefully not. I mean, there may be issues of bugs here too, but different kinds of bugs. So what I really want to discuss, and I hope you won't be disappointed, okay, yeah, is the issue of Lashon Hara. That's one of the major pillars of Mitzvos Bein Adam L'Chaveiro. And as you know, the Chafetz Chaim wrote an entire work on this topic, totally exclusively dedicated to Lashon Hara, Rechilus, those Yisurim that apply to what we're allowed to say, what we're not allowed to say. And I have here on pages 7 and 8 of this handout a photocopy of two of what I think are the most relevant pages in his entire work to our discussion of tonight, and that's the linkage between Lashon Hara on the one hand and inquiries about Shaduchim on the other hand. Because all these issues about inquiries, what you can say, what you're allowed to say, what you have to say, they all revolve around the issues of Lashon Hara. So without further ado, take a look on page 1, and this is the Hebrew source page. And we begin with some of the background, the statements of Chazal with regard to marriage. The first one I want to call to your attention, which will come up over and over again, is a Gemara in Yevamos, and the Gemara says, "Meson nesiv issa, nechis darga nesiv issa." Rashi explains what this means. Rashi says, first of all, "Hamtein ad shetivdok maaseha." We're talking about a young man, and someone has suggested a young woman that he should go out with, and the Gemara advocates that he should wait in order to make the decision. Ad shetivdok maaseha. We're going to talk a lot about those two words. Tivdok maaseha. You should check out her actions, her way of life. The same thing would apply in the reverse with regard to a man. If a woman was suggested a man to go out with, she should be bodekes b'maasov. In that case, you should check out his actions. Shalot tehera v'kantranit. Milashon kanter. Lekanter means someone who's spiteful, who looks for the negative. Someone who is evil in a certain negativism towards their relationships with other people. And then it says nesiv darga, which literally means go down a level. Lo tikach isha chashuva mimcha. Rashi says, don't take a woman who's on a higher level than you, but rather take a woman who's on a lower level than you. We're talking about spiritual levels here. We're not talking about height and weight and everything like that. So what it means is that the Gemara is advocating that when you marry a woman, you better make sure that she's not too great for you. Shema Rashi says, lo tiskavil aleha, that maybe she will not accept you upon her, meaning that she will not have that respect that she should have for her husband. So we're going to leave this right now. I'm hoping that this is stimulating your mind, because there are a lot of issues here that have to be addressed. But this is a statement of Chazal. It's quite familiar. The Gemara tells us something else about checking out a potential shidduch. And the Gemara says that one should check out a woman's brothers, which will be the uncles of the Emir Tzashem and the future children. And the Brisa says in Masechta Sofrim, Ruban shel banim domim liachei ha'em, that most of the children will be similar to their uncle. Now, this may have been true at the time of Chazal, when the family units were very, very tight. You know, in today's society, in contemporary society, one could argue that the uncles come around very occasionally, very infrequently. However, I would like to revisit this, because I do believe that the influence of an uncle might be powerful even in contemporary society. So let's leave that on the side for a minute. The Braisa says in the Masechta Pesachim, again, I'm hitting you with a lot of information that I want you to start, you know, kind of collating and integrating into your mind. Tana Rabbana, Li Olam Yimkar Adam Kol Mashi Yeshlo, a person should sell the shirt off his back, the Yisa Bas Talmud Chacham, and he should marry the daughter of a Torah scholar. She'imeis Ogola, the Gemara actually explains why it's so critical to marry the daughter of a Talmud Chacham, because if he himself dies, or he goes far away, then who's going to raise the children? Obviously his wife is going to raise them without him. Muftach lo she'bonav Talmud Chacham. This is almost like a guarantee that his children be raised in the proper way, because this is what she saw in her house as she was raised. What I'd like to point out to you, and I don't know if anybody noticed this, is that the Rambam brings down this halacha of marrying the daughter of a Talmid Chacham not in one place, but in two different places. And anyone who's even superficially familiar with the style of the Rambam will know. Tom, would you mind moving up a drop here so that maybe Aaron, if you don't mind coming up, and Zeb will come up, and you know. So the idea of marrying a Bas Talmid Chacham comes up twice in the Rambam. But the question is, the Rambam is typically very abridged. He never quotes anything unnecessarily. And in this case, he quotes it not once, but twice. Mm-hmm. And also notice the location where, in what context, the Rambam brings and codifies these dinim. In Hilchas Deos, where the Rambam is talking about the significance, the importance of putting oneself into the right atmosphere, that it's very critical that one finds the right social group, his right friends, he should choose his friends. So in that context, the Rambam says it's very important to have contact on a regular basis with Torah scholars, with Talmidei Chachamim and their students. Kidei lilmod mimaseihem, that we should learn things from their actions, the way they behave. And this, says the Rambam, is a subcategory of ubo tidabek, of clinging to God. Because is it possible to cling to God? God is a fire. He's a Shekhinah. It's not something that you can physically, it's not tangible. Ella, but rather, the Chachamim say in interpreting the mitzvah of Dveikus, that you should be Dovek, you should be close, in close contact with Chachamim and Talmideihem. Lefichach. And here I underlined it. The Rambam didn't underline it, I did. Because I'm using it for our purposes. The Rambam wants the whole picture. Tzarech adam lishtadel sheyisa bas Talmid Chacham. A man should make a great effort to marry the daughter of a Talmid Chacham. Okay? That's number one. The Rambam goes on to say that he should marry off his daughter to a Talmid Chacham. He should always eat with Talmidei Chachamim, you know, go to restaurants with them. Again, I don't know if the Talmidei Chachamim have time to go to restaurants, you know, but whatever limited time they have, go eat out with them. Velasos prakmaktio le Talmidei Chachamim, you should do business with the Talmidei Chachamim. Again, I don't know how much time the Talmidei Chachamim have for business operations, but whatever limited time they have, get involved with them. Uleschavra lehem, and get close to them with an intimacy, to get to know them and learn from their actions, b'chol minei chibur, in any way possible. You know, think out of the box. And this is the mission in Avos that the Rambam codifies here, having mes'avek b'faraglehem. Then the Rambam in Hilchas Yisurei Bia, when he's telling you which women you're not allowed to marry, the Rambam says, this is Perek Chaf Aleph Halacha Lamed Beis, and for those of you who prefer English sources, don't give up. I don't want you to be upset and disappointed. We'll have plenty of English sources tonight. But the Rambam says the following: Li olam yimkar adam kol ma sheyeshlo. He's codifying the Gemara Pesachim that we saw. V'yisa bas Talmid Chacham. Why? She'imeis ogole banav Talmid Chacham. And then the Rambam says that a person should never marry the daughter of an Amoretz, of an ignoramus, because he has, again, the word Amoretz in the Rambam probably means a lot more than someone who's ignorant. It means someone who has negative traits, because in those days, an Amoretz was someone who was sort of antithetical to the rabbis. He always tried to undermine them. He had all sorts of other negative traits. And therefore, the Rambam says, if you want to raise your children, guarantee that your children be raised properly, you should marry a Bas Talmid Chacham. Now, my friends, I ask you the question, and I don't mean it rhetorically. Why would the Rambam have quoted this idea, this halacha of marrying a Bas Talmid Chacham twice in two different contexts?
Well, either emphasize the point or to try to...
Yeah, but if he's emphasizing the point, why would he write it twice in two different contexts? You know, maybe he should write it twice in the same context. But is it possible that the Rambam is telling you that there are two different halachas here? And there may be nafkaminas, there may be differences between the two. What's the first halacha? What mitzvah are you fulfilling by marrying the daughter of a Talmud Chacham? Again, you marry any daughter, you've mekayim the mitzvah of marriage. But if you marry a bas Talmud Chacham, the daughter of Talmud Chacham, you're being mekayim an additional mitzvah. Which additional mitzvah? Look at the Rambam again. If everyone could take a look, those of you who you don't have a Rambam,
tidbak,
yeah, ubo tidbak, v'tidbak bo, meaning to the davek in Hashem, which we can only do in a circuitous way. The means of which is by marrying the daughter of a Talmud Chacham. In this case, which relationship is the Rambam focusing on? Is he focusing on the marriage relationship between Reuven and the daughter, we'll call her Leah Bas Yaakov, who's a Talmud Chacham? Is Rambam focusing on the marriage?
Yeah, no.
He's talking about the father-in-law. This is a way of getting to come close to your father-in-law.
Yeah.
In the Rambam and Yisuri B, on the other hand, what's the focal point here? What's the emphasis? Why am I marrying a Bas Talmud Chacham? Not because of my relationship with my father-in-law. That's not even mentioned here. The Rambam doesn't whisper a word about the Shver. Who's he talking about here? The children, exactly. Raising the children properly. And my friends, I would think that there's a tremendous difference between these two Rambams. And that is, give me just 1 minute to develop an idea that I've been thinking about for many years. And that is, how do these halachot apply in contemporary society?
Listen.
If you want a girl, you want to marry a girl who is makeres keser Torah, she appreciates what Torah study is about, she's dedicated to Hashem's mitzvahs, she's loyal to the Torah, I'm not sure how critical it is in our day that you marry the daughter of a Talmud Chacham. Because today we have such a sophisticated educational system that if a woman is brought up in a school and the school goes out of its way to educate this girl in such a way that she imbibes, she takes in all the emphasis on Torah, whether it's Torah study, whether it's the fulfillment of the mitzvahs, then she's a Bas Talmud Chacham from the perspective of the Rambam in Hilchos Yisurei Bia Perek Chaf Aleph. But nevertheless, even in our contemporary society, one could argue that the Rambam would advocate to marry a Bas Talmud Chacham for a different reason. Not because a Bas Talmud Chacham is the ideal girl who will know how to raise your children, al derech haTorah, but because she is the daughter of a Talmud Chacham who will now become your father-in-law, and through him you will fulfill the mitzvah of Vidovka Bo, of getting close to Hashem. So again, just to summarize, the Rambam has two different halachas here in terms of the significance and the goal of marrying a Bas Talmud Chacham. By the way, I would think that even in our day, even in contemporary society, where a woman gets a wonderful education in a Beis Yaakov school or whatever school she goes to, it's irrelevant because there's still some sort of her relationship to dedicating a life and a family to the Torah of study is still somewhat strange to her. It's still maybe foreign to her. If her father will take out a sefer and learn Gemara and go to the Beis Medrash with his chavrusa every night, whenever he has a spare moment, then she will appreciate the significance of Torah, even if her father is not a professional Talmud Chacham, so to speak. But if, on the other hand, she doesn't see a dedication to Torah life and Torah study in her house, then even in our time, despite what she's getting from the school, there is a little bit of a distance or a friction between what she's getting in the school and what she's seeing in her own.
Sure.
Rabbi Akiva has a famous statement, which is in Avos to Rabbi Nosan. How important it is to find the right shidduch. The woman who's appropriate for you, the man who's appropriate for you. Rabbi Akiva says that you have to marry a woman who's mehugenes, that she is an upstanding citizen, she's a balas midas, she's dedicated to Torah, and she is the right fit for you. Because if she's not the right fit for you, says Rabbi Akiva, that marriage might engender a violation of an entire slew of violations. Because if she gets you angry, and again, when I say she, it goes the other way around too, of course, then you might violate lo tikum, lo titar, you might want to take revenge against her. Lo tisna sachicha bilvavecha. Even in a marriage situation, you can come to hate and violate this horrendous isur of lo tisna sachicha, and violate for sure the mitzvah v'yahavta l'reich kamocha. Rabbi Akiva himself said that this marriage, if it wasn't properly suitable, then it could reach the level in which he or she, because of this terrible marriage situation, is dreaming about the death of his or her spouse. I wouldn't have said such a thing. I would have had trouble getting those words out of my mouth. You know, the famous story about this guy who asks the rabbi, "Rabbi, did you ever think of divorcing your wife?" He said, "Divorce never, murder many times." You know? But that's an old joke from, you know, from the past. But this is a very serious issue. Says Rabbi Akiva, find the right girl that matches you. Find the right young man that is the good match for you. And I say this all as an introduction to the concept of inquiries, of checking out the shidduch, making sure as best as you can by investigating whether this person is at least potentially the right marriage partner. And we already mentioned the concept which we saw in Masechta Sofrim, but now I want to show you from the original source, which is the Gemara Bava Basra. Adaf kuf yud omer rova hanosei isha tzarch sheyivdok ba'acheha. And the Rashbam, because there's no Rashi at that point, the Rashbam says habonim domim li achei ha'em, that there's a certain similarity between the children and their mother's brothers, and therefore you better check out the mother's brothers. How does Rava know such a thing? He didn't invent it on his own, but he rather derived it from the case of Aaron. Vayikach Aaron es Elisheva, and the Torah goes out of its way to tell you who Elisheva was. She was the sister of Nachshon, Nachshon ben Aminadav, one of the great heroes. You remember when they left Mitzrayim and Nachshon jumps into the water. And it means that the reason why Aaron was so keen on marrying Elisheva was not so much because she was the daughter of Aminadav, but because she was the sister of Nachshon. And that means that the brothers of the wife that you're taking, who will be the mother of your children, play a very, very important role. I would like to suggest that even in our time, the uncle has a profound influence for three different reasons. Number one, there are occasional encounters between the uncle and his nephews, his nieces. They come for Thanksgiving dinner, whatever it is. And sometimes the child is very, very much impressed by his uncle. It makes a profound impression on the sensitive soul of a young child. Number two, the mother of the children may raise her children in a very similar way to the way her brothers were raised. So she looks at her brothers and she sees how they were brought up and she tries to imitate that. And finally, I think there are certain characteristics that come through the family. If you check out the family, then you may find that the family has a spiritual heads up because the uncles are so significant, they're so advanced and dedicated to Torah, and so forth and so on. So again, what we're suggesting is that it's very important to check and see what you can find out.
Question. Is it just by the brothers, or what about the aunts?
The Gemara is focused on the brothers of the mother, meaning the brothers of this potential woman that you're going to marry. Again, if you take it from the third perspective, in terms of getting an idea of what's in the family, and what's in the genes, then it would apply to anyone in the family. But the Gemara derives it, Rava derives it only from the case of Elisheva, the sister of Nachshon. Yes.
There's actually typically like another story that contradicts this whole thing, with Chizkiyahu marrying the daughter of Yishayahu, even though he was trying to get, he still had kids that were both Rashayim.
Right, you're not guaranteed. You know, nothing
not
is right. Nothing is guaranteed. These are just suggestions, right here. I want to tell you something, Eliezer. Yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry.
What about brother-in-laws?
Yeah, brothers-in-law also have a... that's what I think Aaron was asking. You know, other members of the family.
And then you said it was the genes.
I see what you're saying. You know, somebody marries into the family. Yeah, brother-in-law is also an uncle. He has a tremendous impact. Next, Eliezer Eved Avram. Isn't he the paradigm of someone who's looking for a shidduch? And who does he find for Yitzchak? Rivka. And the Torah goes into great detail. It's at the bottom of your page 1 about how Eliezer goes about looking for a suitable marriage partner for Yitzchak. And he turns to Hashem, Eliezer, and he says to Hashem, Hakrei nola fanai hayom. And he wants to find a woman who will come out and not only water the men, you know, the human beings, but also gam ligmalech eshkeh. And the truth is, there's no doubt in anyone's mind here that Eliezer Eved Avram was putting all his focus on the midah of chesed, correct? And there's no question that that's a very powerful and profound quality that one has to find in marriage. But yet, not so many people know the Gemara in Tainus, which is on the top of your page 2. And the Gemara in Tainus tells us that Shlosha Shalu Shaloka Hogan. There were three individuals who asked God in an inappropriate way. Their prayers were not really precise. They weren't exactly the way they should have been. And the first of the three is none other than Eliezer Eved Avram. His approach and his request to God was not totally appropriate. Why is that so? Tichsiv. He says, Vahaya Hanara Asher Omar Eleha Hati Na Kadech. He says, wait a minute. Okay, she's a Balas Chesed. Does that therefore make her the right shidduch?
No.
The appropriate marriage partner? Is that all I have to know about a young woman?
No.
And the Gemara says no. But Tom, I didn't know that until I saw this Gemara. You knew it already before. Either that or you knew the Gemara. Yachal afilu chigeres vafilu suma. Hey, what about her physical appearance? What about her capabilities? And in that sense, the Gemara is raising a critique against Eliezer Eved Avram. As much as we put Eliezer as the paradigm of the, you know, the shadchan, but yet he didn't do an exhaustive job in his checking out. So I use this Gemara as a proof text that we have to be very careful about checking it out. And I say even more than that. I say that this whole idea of helping out in shidduchim. For example, if someone turns to you, and again, you may be married, you may be single, could be a friend. This is very common, even amongst young people, that they will ask for a reference to check out someone from one of their friends. And it's so important to get involved, to try to help out. And we'll see what that means in a few minutes. That I would say it's an act of imitating God. Because David HaMelech says in Tehillim, Elokim Moshiv Yechidim Boisa. Now when you translate this literally into English, it loses a great deal in translation. It says that God will see to it that the Yechidim, whoever they are, these people, will have a bias, they will have a house. But I think if you read the Radak, you get the impression that these Yechidim are individuals who are lonely. They're living a world as singles, alone, and they're lonely. Loneliness is a basic existential experience of man. And so, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the one who's really being Moshe of Yechidim HaBaisa. He's finding a bias, a family, for these Yechidim, for those who are single. And therefore, if HaKadosh Baruch Hu is involved, as the Gemara says in Moed Katan, May Hashem Ish Le'isha, that God is Mezavig Zivugin, then we too should try to do whatever we can to try to help solve the problem of loneliness. And I think this perhaps is what the Pasuk means. Because Rabbeinu Bechai tells us that for Halachta B'drachav, which commands us to follow in the footsteps of God, to imitate His ways, Mahu rachu, mafato rachu, mahu chanan afato chanan, hu malbish arumen, hu Kover Mason. And in each case, Chazal go through to show you how God got involved in all these acts of chesed. What could be a greater act of chesed than helping someone find the right shidduch? Not just any shidduch, but the right shidduch. And to the extent at which you can help, you could be domelo, you could be similar to Hashem, you fulfill the mitzvah of v'halachta v'drachav. Now when we say domelo, when we say that you have to find the right shidduch, I want to share with you an insight of the Netziv, the great Rosh Hashiva of Halozha. The Pasuk tells us in Breishis, Lo tov heyos ha'odom levado. It's not good that man be alone. And Adam HaRishon was created Yechidi, he was alone. Es elo ezer kenegdo. Now notice that phrase. Ezer kenegdo. On the one hand she's an ezer. On the other hand she's kenegdo. She's against him. So the Gemara says in Masecht Yevamah, Zocha ezer. If he was Zocha, he got the right shidduch. She's an ezer. She helps him. Lo zocha kenegdo. She's going to fight against him. And that's not good. That's the impression you get from the Gemara in Yevamos. And Rashi quotes that Chazal right here in his Pirush Al Torah at the beginning of the Chumash. The Netziv Mivalojin offers a unique insight as to what the Gemara has in mind when it says Zacha, Zacha, Ezer, Lo Zacha, Kenegdo. We're not going to go through the entire text of the Netziv, but if you could follow me inside, and I will highlight certain points in English outside. He says the kavana, this is on the third line, is that if someone, for example, is an angry person, he has a hot temper, so his wife could do one of two things. And again, everything we say could switch the round. She could either be an ezer, which means misayaslo, you know, she could sort of fan the flames, you know, add fuel to the fire and say, yeah, rah, 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 get even more angry and more angry. And he's having a blast. Who nenem he's there. He really appreciates his wife. She's a great Azer because she's telling me that my anger is justified. I should be more angry. And she's an Azer. Just 1 minute. But the Netziv says the following. Acharkach, later on, Kishasaragzano, when his anger, what word am I looking for? Subsides, right? Great, subsides. He says, Yeshlo tsar harbe mizeh. He realized he messed up. In his anger, he did things that were totally irrational, uncontrollable, and unfortunately irreversible in many cases. And therefore, his wife, look at the phrase of the Netziv, Hosifa Ishto Eish V'Yetzim, she had added fuel to the flames. That's not good. But if, on the other hand, in such a situation, Masha Enkinim, he min nagdoso, she's kenegdo. In other words, she says, hey, don't get angry. Anger is not a good thing. Calm down, my friend. V'tefayis also, and she uses her ingenuity to figure out how to get the fire to slowly diminish. Then, even though he at that moment perceives his wife as minagdosa, you know, instead of justifying, rah, 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 it's great that you're angry, she's fighting with him, and she's saying, no, you should not get angry, it's a bad thing. Nevertheless, she's the Ezer Hamiti. She is the true, genuine help for her husband. And therefore, what the Gemara means, says the Netziv, when it says, Zocha Ezer, meaning, if he's Zocha and she is Kenegdo, then when she's kenegdo, when he misuses or abuses his human qualities, then zocha, he's zocha if she's kenegdo. If on the other hand he's misusing his qualities, he's acting in a negative way and she becomes an ezer, then lo zocha, he's not being zocha. Again, if you have a chance, go through this netziv, it's fascinating. What I'd like to talk to you about is the Chofetz Chaim, and this you can turn to page 7. The Chofetz Chaim, in his very classical work on the laws of Lashon Hara, dedicates chapter 9 in Iser Rechilus. I didn't have room to write page 8, but it's on the flip side of page 7. To the cases in which we have to speak derogatory negatively about someone. We're absolutely required to do so. We're going from one extreme of a very severe prohibition to the other extreme of something that's advocated and even required. And what's the case? The case of the Chofetz Chaim is Roe Shechaveiro Rotzel Ishtate Beis Dovar Im Echad. He sees his friend that wants to become, enter into a partnership agreement with so-and-so. V'hu mishar b'vada yisoviv lo inyan ra. He knows that no good is going to come out of this partnership. In such a case, says the Chofetz Chaim, tzorich lahagid lo, he must warn him, lest he enter into this partnership, k'dei shalatzilo mi'inyan ra. But he says, this situation of what we call lashon hara l'toeles, which is being advocated, requires five conditions. So let's just quickly go through the five conditions that the Chofetz Chaim sets here. The first condition, which is on the left side of your page, Yizoher me'od shelo yachlit tekef es ha'inyan b'daitel inyan ra, chak yizbona en heitem itchilu hu be'etzem inyan ra. First of all, he has to be certain that this information that he has is true, either because he saw it himself, he was personally a witness to this fellow stealing or whatever he did, or at the very least, he has reliable information that he's convinced beyond a shadow of a doubt. Number two, lo yagdil b'sipuro es inyan hara yosa mimashahu. No exaggeration. It has to be accurate. Don't leave out any details that could be mitigating circumstances. Number three, shiyechavin rak l'toeles. It's critical that his intention must be l'toeles, for the benefit of the person. Wasali kanezik mi olav velo, not chas v'shalom mitzad sina, because he hates this fellow and this is his way of hurting him.
Benefit for which person?
Okay, we're going to get to three possible options for that. So I have to hold on to your question, Steve. It's an excellent question. Number four, which is on the bottom of the right column on what would be page 8, he says, "Im yochel l'save v'satoel s'sem b'beli she'itz tarich l'galus l'fon avinya l'ra." He says, would it be possible to achieve the constructive goal without speaking derogatory, through some other means? And he has long footnotes here, different scenarios, how you can accomplish that. And finally, the fifth condition is, kol ze eno mutarak im lo yisavah de sipura mamishla nidon. In other words, if, let's say, as a result of your speaking in a derogatory way, you will cause a loss to that person, the subject of your lashon hara, and that loss is even greater than the loss that he would suffer if this whole situation was taken in front of a Jewish court. And again, there are a number of scenarios that the Chofetz Chaim lists over here. And now to get to Steve's question. When we say lashon hara l'toeles, that means it's for the benefit, it's constructive. So for whom is it constructive? For whom is it beneficial? And the answer is that there are three possibilities, all of which are correct. Number one, it could be constructive, and most likely will be, for the person to whom you're discussing it. Who's the potential victim entering into, as it were, a partnership? Number two, it could be beneficial for the person himself, the person that you're speaking about. For example, let's say there was a young person who violated a certain halachic crime, and by telling it to his Rebbe, his mentor, his parent, it may be beneficial for that person. Because it may be that under this case, in this situation, the Rebbe or the mentor will help have the proper influence on that young person. And furthermore, it may be beneficial for him in that if the truth gets out earlier through that method, in a more private sort of way, then that subject will be in much better shape than if it came out publicly in an open trial, you know, if he's humiliated in front of a council of some sort. Thirdly, and this is the most interesting case that the Chofetz Chaim discusses, and that is it's beneficial to the person who's speaking. Sometimes a person has been hurt so deeply that he has to lighten the burden, take it off his chest, and he needs someone to listen to. Keep in mind, the person who's listening is not allowed to accept the lashon hara as true. He's allowed to what we would call bichoshesh. He has to be careful, but he can't absolutely accept it for true. So if you're unburdening yourself, as we all do, about someone who hurted you in your perception, in front of someone, make sure that that someone is absolutely righteous and knows what to do, how to help you without accepting the Lashon Hara. Those are the three cases. And now I want to discuss the following scenario with you, if you can take a look on page 3. Now, what I've done here in the pages that I've given you is I'm using a book on the mitzvos of Bein Adam L'Chaveiro, which I just got as a gift. It's written by Rabbi Yitzchak Silver from England. And it's a large, large book, but he has a chapter on Shiduchim. So what I was able to do was to photocopy here, there, and elsewhere, you know, cut and paste, different cases, different scenarios, and I'd like to see what your response would be to these scenarios. Mm-hmm. I'm just going to add one word to prejudice you. I think there's a lot of controversial stuff here in what he says.
Fantastic.
Oh, you like that? Okay.
Yeah.
All right, so you're on board for a fight over here. Because he has definite views, and I'm not 100% sure that I always agree with him, and we'll see what you have to say. Okay, the first scenario, if everyone can take a look on page 3, and just read it quickly by yourself and tell me what you think. For those who don't have, you didn't get the pages? Okay. So I'm just going to summarize it for you. Well, maybe, oh, great, you can look on the Tom, that's great. Who else didn't get one? Binyamin, can you look on again?
Yeah.
Okay, take a look. Okay. Okay, let's just summarize the story. The names are not important, they're fictitious. But what happened was that a friend approached her friend, who was the mother of the bride, to ask her how things went after the wedding. Mm-hmm. How's this couple getting on?
Yeah.
And the mother of the bride was shocked that this friend of hers was unaware of what had transpired, because that marriage was completely gone. It terminated in divorce. What happened? Shortly after the wedding, they became aware that the chassan was suffering from serious psychotic disorders. Again, I emphasize those three words because that's how he's presenting the case. Serious psychotic disorders.
Psychiatric, not psychotic.
I'm sorry, psychiatric. I meant to say. Yeah. Sorry, but thank you for. This is all because I need new glasses. Not joking. Anyway, so the main thing I wanted to point out to you is the third paragraph, because before I read the third paragraph, I thought the fault was with the parents of the bride for not having done the proper research. As we said at the outset, Chazal put so much emphasis on checking out a potential marriage partner and making sure that, again, to the best of your ability, that this is a suitable marriage. So I thought, wait a minute, I'm getting very angry at the parents of the Kala. How would they allow their daughter to marry a fellow who suffers from psychiatric...
Right, serious psychiatric disorder.
Okay, I got it.
Which means that deals with drugs as well, but psychiatric.
But look at the third paragraph. And all of a sudden, the story takes on a whole different meaning. And the good guys become the bad guys. The bad guys become the good guys, I think, at least in his presentation. Mm-hmm. He's saying that we spoke to so many people. Again, I don't know how much is so many people, but you really get the feeling that they tried as hard as they could. And look who they asked. They asked, said the chassan was from abroad. We didn't know him. We made an extra effort to try to get information. And according to the mother of the Kal, if we take her as speaking the truth, I don't know, unless she's lying, but she's claiming that they all knew about the problem and no one said a word. Any reactions?
Yeah, but when they say all, are we talking about?
In other words, what we're saying is this was public knowledge. Again, when I say public knowledge, at least amongst the people who she asked.
Sometimes when they say all, I mean the couple. The couple that's involved, because otherwise... Are you
no. Again, when you say the couple that's involved, you know, we're talking about a young man is being suggested as a shidduch for a young woman, correct?
Yeah.
So there are no couples here involved, except for the fact that the mother of this girl says that she did all the effort. Again, I'm giving my own dramatic words here, but I'm pretty close to the text here, to check out this young man.
Right.
And nobody told her that this guy's got psychiatric problems.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. What, you have any reaction to this? I mean, what
who no, I was saying it was Tom.
I can't hear you. You're saying the same as Tom?
Yeah,
we're all couples. There's no couples here.
Oh, no, not
yeah, okay, good. Don't throw me off here with couples.
It could be possible that someone has psychiatric disorders and those people don't know.
Okay, but you know, no. She's claiming that they did know about it.
No, I'm okay. So
if you give her the benefit of the doubt, maybe the fellow was an institute. I don't know. You know, again, I'm not going to try to fill in the missing blanks.
No, I agree with what she said there. She said, you know, maybe people should have asked her, probably thought they're being biased, not asking, could not.
They thought that what? Exactly.
You also want to give.
Seth?
Well, having read like something like at least half a dozen books on Shaduchim.
Ah, okay, I'm sorry.
No, I'm saying like...
I feel like maybe you...
No, it's what a neck I'm of saying toes, is that I'm just trying to get a perspective from what I've read, which is that the writers of these books are usually from communities, and I stress the word community. They're writing for an audience that presumably comes from a community where everyone knows each other, and that's really not the case with Bali Tshuva. It's very, very hard.
Okay, Zev, you're making a very important point, but it's not relevant to what I'm trying to evoke from you. I'm asking you to do two things for me. Number one, I'm asking you to presume that everything that this woman, is saying is accurate.
Right.
Okay? You want to tell me amongst Bali Tshuva it would not be accurate? That's wonderful. But in this particular context, again, just to get the argument going here, why not assume that the facts on the ground are exactly the way she says it? Now, I'm ready for my question to you.
Right.
The people didn't tell her. What is your response to that?
Right. Exactly.
Right?
No. They should have told her.
It's wrong.
No, wrong. Okay. So we got two against one over here.
If she
that's
asked
good.
Someone specifically, they should have told her the truth.
What do you mean ask someone? She asked so many people and they all knew. Let's not question the facts on the graph. She asked 50 people who knew that this man was psychiatrically disordered.
First of all,
are you listening, Rabosai? Should I scream a little louder?
No.
Those are the facts on the ground. Please don't question the facts because that's the case.
Right.
What's your response?
But so all of them probably asked individually, so they all had their own.
No.
They should have asked them as a group. Not individually.
I'm saying that individually they thought to themselves, I don't want to say this. Maybe the next person, they might be thought the next person will say. No. Or, like you said, that they didn't make a solution harm.
I'm asking you, Yitz, what is your response when you come back to someone and you say to him, why didn't you tell me? And he answers you, well, I didn't want to violate the Issur Lashon Hara. What are you going to tell him?
You're allowed to.
I would hang him up from a pole. I would tar and feather him.
Well, first of all, wait a second.
What are you talking about? You didn't want to tell me because of Lashon Hara.
I know, but you're going.
There are certain situations, my friends, that's my opinion. Now we'll hear Tom's opinion. Yeah, he's smarter than I am, which is true. But, you know, just to hear someone who's not as smart as you, Tom, I would say there's no issue of Lashon Hara here except for the following. There's a mitzvah to tell. This woman, the daughter of Razi or whoever it was, ended up in a marriage that probably lasted, I'm just guessing, for a month or two. I don't know if he specifies. Did they tell you?
Yeah, it's within the first month.
Now, wait a minute. I have to tell you this. You know, this girl has already a strike against her. She was married to a psychiatric patient from Bellevue, you know, and now she's divorced. And why? You're telling me because of Lashon Hara? If you were my students, I would throw you out of my class for saying such a thing. Literally. That is totally unacceptable, despicable, repulsive, anti-halachic, and against everything that we know about Judaism. So don't hit me with Lashon Hara here. There's no Lashon Hara here unless you want to violate about 17 lavim because you withheld the information that you were absolutely obligated to share.
Right.
So it was ignorance then.
They didn't want to get involved.
I don't want to call it ignorance. I would call it total stupidity. You know, I can live with ignorance. Ignorance I can tolerate. Some people are ignorant. They never got educated. But I can't tolerate stupidity.
Every psychiatric disorder means that somebody can't have a marriage.
Okay, that's a good question. Excellent. I hear an intelligent comment.
Also, maybe if the truth would have come out, they could have worked it out. You know, the girl might have been
crazy
about the
that's
life.
Okay.
Maybe they thought the group was
in
the okay. Okay, good.
Because the truth is, there's only a certain amount of information that's provided here, and so one side is being attacked because it makes it easier.
Right.
You're leaving the opportunity to protect whom you're protecting. At the same time, there may be another side of the story as well, as you're putting both neuroses together.
Maybe she was psychic. Maybe she was
and
also.
And not only that, in today's world.
In
today's world, basically, unfortunately, a lot of people have certain kinds of drug. It says psychiatric here, which means it's dealing with drugs. Otherwise, it'd be psychological, some kind of a chemical imbalance or something.
I wanted to show you something else, but I can't. Of course, I can't find it. Right?
So basically, in today's world, unfortunately, everything is either prescribed or overprescribed, whatever the case may be, and it could be coming from both sides. That's for sure. So you have to look at much more information than actually what's being said right here.
I want you to just quickly take a look at page 4, if you can. And let's get a sense of how sensitive the issue is of knowing exactly what to say and what not to say. Because I would subscribe to the following position. Mm-hmm. There are certain situations where I think clearly you have to tell. You have to divulge, you know, some negative information. Mm-hmm. On the other extreme, there are certain cases where I think you should not divulge. But in the middle, between the two extremes, there's a large gray mass, which is absolutely unclear. Now, why is this issue so sensitive? Because on the one hand, as you'll see on the top of your page 4, We want to go great lengths as much as we can to promote a shidduch.
Right.
There are so many situations in which a person cannot find their marriage partner, and our heart aches for them. And we want to go all out to try to make sure that they get married. He says a story about the Chafetz Chaim, that the Chafetz Chaim would sometimes tell people that he, the Chafetz Chaim, was related to this young man, this young woman, in order to encourage the shidduch. That itself is controversial, but that's the story he tells. The Gemara tells us about Rabbi Yishmael, this is the Gemara Nedarim, that there was a certain individual who made a vow not to derive any benefit from his niece. Okay, now you can marry your niece, let's say your sister's daughter, in fact it's even a special kiyum. And Rabbi Yishmael said that once this uncle took upon himself the vow, Rabbi Yishmael did everything that he could in order to annul the vow. That's called Heter Nedarim, or the Pesach. And what he did was he took this woman who came from a very poor family, and he took her into his home, and he lavished her with food and with clothing. He turned her into a beautiful woman, and then he turned to the uncle and he said, "Do you want to marry this woman?" And at first the uncle didn't even recognize his own niece because she had undergone a complete transformation. He says, "Yeah, I want to marry this girl," right? So Rabbi Yishmael did everything that he could in order to encourage this shidduch. In fact, the Gemara says in Kiddushin that a father should do everything that he can to provide for his daughter generously so that she will be an attractive person to marry. HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself, the Gemara tells us in Brachos, gets involved in Shidduchim, in getting the wedding, you know, for Adam HaRishon, Chazal say that the Shushvinin were the Malachi Asharis. HaKadosh Baruch Hu Bishchina was there at the wedding between Adam and Chava. So obviously there's so many reasons why we want to help a lonely person find the Shidduch. But nevertheless, there is a limit to how far we can go. We've got to find the appropriate shidduch. Mm-hmm. Hiding real faults in a shidduch proposal, this is in the next to the last paragraph, can have disastrous results. So there's a very delicate balancing act here. On two sides of the scale, there are weights going in different directions. One side of the scale tips in favor of doing everything that you can to see to it that this person gets married. But on the other side of the scale is the dedication to make sure that you find the right shidduch. Right. You can't just go to any ends. If this marriage ends up in divorce, the Mizbeach, the Gemara tells the Masechta Gittin, sheds tears over the divorce. Mm-hmm. Not only that, the Gemara in Eruvin says that in a bad marriage, the suffering spouse, and sometimes it's both of them, experience Gehenna. It's as bad as going to that place, right? Mm-hmm. And therefore, we've got to be very careful. If you take a look on page 5, And again, I encourage you to take this home and read this in your spare time. There's a lot of information here, which I cut and pasted from different parts of the book. He says the following. He says, this is about the seventh line down from the top. On one side of the scale lies our obligation to help a match go through. On the other side of the scale lies all the mitzvahs of not standing aside when someone is in danger or about to suffer a loss, and not giving true and sound advice. So you know something about this potential marriage partner, and you refuse to share it with the person, and what you're doing is you're violating the law of lo samen al dam riacha. You are violating the prohibition of standing aside when someone is in danger. You can prevent and protect them from suffering a tremendous loss if only you'll give them the right advice. So therefore, when we are asked and inquired for information about a shidduch, keep in mind this balance. Understand the severity and the implications of what your words have. Every single word, if it has the wrong, you know, emphasis, even if it's very subtle, can completely undermine a shidduch. And therefore, we have to be responsible for our words. Now here, before we read the end of page 5 and page 6, I'd like you to see another scenario and see what you say about this scenario. This is on page 9.
Before you go into the other scenario.
Yeah. But if everyone could turn to page 9, then we'll have a discussion.
You just presented. The implication is that even if it is that you're not asked for advice, you should volunteer the information?
Yes, absolutely. And Mirtz Hashem, if we want to continue next week, that's up to you. I am going to offer at least 5 situations in which you should offer the information even if you weren't asked to do so.
Which side of the scale would the rabbi place being truthful about one's age in the shidduch?
Okay, so that's going to come under Steve's question about what information am I required to offer if I'm not asked. If I am asked, then I have to be truthful. Are there ways or situations in which I'm allowed to lie?
Or not say.
It's going to come up here in these pages. So let's just hold on. We're going to see the case on page 9.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, then?
Okay.
And again, I think this is directly related to what we're discussing here about what you may be required to tell about a shidduch. Okay, can everybody look at page 9? And very quickly skim through it. How old is Dina? She's over 30. That much we know.
Right, over 30.
Correct?
Right.
She's over 30.
Even though
let's say she's over 40, she's over 50, who cares?
But she looks
what difference it makes? But it makes an impact on a woman by the name of Shana, whose heart goes out for this girl, Dina, because she is living a lonely life. Okay? So what does she decide to suggest? Again, it doesn't say that she went through it because she had a friend who tried to talk her out of it. Who is she going to suggest? My neighbor's brother-in-law. But Penina, you yourself told me when I asked you for information for my own niece that this guy is terribly hot-tempered.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, that's true, she answers. But better than not suggesting anything, isn't it?
No.
Oh, wait a minute, Tom. Now you're on my side. Whoa. Hey, are we making progress here? Or have you read Zev's 5 books in the last 20 minutes and you got smart? I don't know what happened.
No, you have to balance the situation.
Yeah.
But while you're balancing the situation, you also, it seems like sometimes things are done in a shallow type of way, and I think that you made a very good point before, which is basically what actually is included, how quickly is it included, even when somebody is dating, let's say, themselves in a relationship, right? Do they have to, on date one, talk about what we talked about in the opening bell, which is basically serious psychological or psychiatric difficult, whatever it may be, in date one or before they ever go out to the shotgunners? I have serious problems. Really? Well, who wants to deal with you next?
That's right. next case. Right?
At what point do you actually start?
But what do you say?
Do you
I'm
wait
just
a month,
asking
then?
You.
Do you wait 3 weeks in before you?
I got
the
impression, Tom, that you were jolted by Shayna, right? Because Shayna says, "I'm going to suggest my neighbor's brother-in-law." What jolted you? If you read the text again, do you remember how Shayna justifies this to her friend Pnina? What does she say?
Yeah. It's twofold. One, she wouldn't give her, one, she wouldn't let her own niece date him. And then secondly, she says, right. Okay, oh, well, you know, because she's old, but older, I should send her to him.
Right, look at the language. I, this is not a text in the Rambam that we should move right. But it's just interesting the way the truth comes out when she says it's better than not suggesting right. anything at all.
It's terrible.
Like, you know, basically this woman is so guilt-ridden that, and she's so desperate to spare herself right. and unburden this weight of guilt off her shoulders that she's willing to suggest someone that under normal circumstances she would right. never suggest.
But
so who is she really interested in? Whose best interest does she have in mind? Doesn't sound like she has the potential caller's best interest in mind. Okay? Now, what I'd like to suggest, and then we'll have to try to finish it up with this. Okay. Well, I don't know. I have a lot to talk about tonight. All right, we'll see how to cut this down. Will you do me a favor, and whatever we don't finish, take this with you and look it over. If you didn't get it, we'll photocopy. Okay.
You know, people also learn how to manage situations, and so there can be growth and development along the
excellent.
Way. It depends on how much people actually put into it and want to put into the situation.
Right. Well, we're going to get to that a little later, not tonight, but on a different occasion. But I wanted to share with you an insight here that I found about shidduch inquiries. This is on page 10. Okay. And then maybe if we have 5 more minutes, I want to show you one more scenario on page 11. It's very interesting. He says on the one end, in the second paragraph, we're permitted to ask as many questions to as many people as we feel are necessary. The sky's the limit in order to get a clear picture and ensure the success of the shidduch. No question is too picky. That's an interesting statement of itself. I mean, can you ask anything? I don't know. Maybe he's exaggerating a little bit.
What was the last time you were in Muncie?
Good
grief.
Picking questions.
The questions are reached the point
of absurdity. Okay, but again, as long as we're talking about someone who is, you know, is interested in benefiting from this clarification, okay, fine. Hey, he has a quote from the Gemara in Shavuos that the Chafetz Chaim says that there was a person who didn't make adequate inquiries before he took upon himself a business partner, and as a result he had to demand that his partner take an oath, and that oath was a Shavuos Sheker. So all this, the Gemara says, makes the person a Rasha because he didn't do his due diligence to check out who he's entering into partnership with. After all, he didn't take the Shavuos Sheker. The partner took the Shavuos Sheker. He took a false oath. But since he entered into business and his partnership was a result of negligence on his part, in the sense that he didn't check it out. You know, you want to know that you're entering into partnership with someone who's honest, and you didn't even bother checking him out. You're considered an evildoer because you didn't make that inquiry. But he says, very interesting, that when we ask about a shidduch, it's very critical that the asker and the responder talk the same language. What does that mean, that they speak the same language? He says there's so many words that are vague and ambiguous, and they could mean 50 different things. He gives a very cute example. He says, they tell you that the girl's a balas chesed. What does that mean? She lends her blow dryer to her dormitory roommate? So she's a balas chesed? Or does it mean that she's willing to organize meals for the sick? She organizes babysitting help for young mothers in her neighborhood. That's a balas chesed. So, you know, what do they mean when they tell you she's a balas chesed, right? And every other girl is a balas chesed. Maybe every girl is a balas chesed for that point. He says that they throw around words when they talk about a young man. They say, oh, he's a tzaddik. What does that mean, he's a tzaddik? He wears and sits his out? That makes him a tzaddik?
Right.
Well, they talk about him that he's a Talmud Chacham. What do you mean, Talmud Chacham? Does he know anything? He knows nothing. And he's a Talmud Chacham, right? And they throw around these words. He's sociable. Yeah, he's very social. You know what they mean when they tell you someone is social? You know what they really mean? They mean that he's a nice guy, but he's introverted. You can't get a word out of him, you know? I'm exaggerating. But really, what does the word sociable mean? He's punctual. You know what it means? He's punctual. He gets there before Baruch. Hey, that sounds familiar. I'm punctual too, you know what I'm saying? He's a machmir. What's he? He's a machmir. He takes upon himself the latest chumers. So what? If you tell him he's a machmir when it comes to an Issa Doraisa, you know, then okay. You know, he's a scholar. He says the word Ilui. It's very interesting. You know, in Hebrew, there's a street in my neighborhood called Rechov HaIlui. Anyway, an Ilui is literally a genius. So he says that in Chutz La'aretz, when you call someone a genius, all you mean to say is that he's totally disconnected from reality. You know, he doesn't know his right hand from his left hand, you know.
Yeah.
But he says in Eretz Yisrael, the word Ilui might mean a whole different thing. You know, he may mean that he's tops in his class. So it's very crucial that we understand each other's language and we know what's being said and what information is accurate and being shared. And we'll close with this last scenario on page 11. I find this the most painful of everything we discussed tonight. But I don't want to prejudice you. You may find it painful that someone decided, because of the laws of Lashon Hara, not to tell the potential suitor that this fellow is undergoing psychiatric help, right? That might be painful, and it's painful. It really is painful. But this, I don't know, this one got to me. Okay? So, we're talking about a man by the name of Mendel Moseson. Strange. Okay, fine. And he turns to his wife, Mirla, and he says to her, what's going to be with our daughter? No shidduchim are coming her way. Is that not typical? But what becomes atypical is when his wife, whose name is Malka, right, the daughter's name is Mirla, turns to her husband, Mendel Moseson, and says, wait a minute, I'm a little bit puzzled when you say that there are no shidduchim coming her way, because after all, you've been taking notes, and your notebook is flowing over with possible shidduchim for our daughter, Mirla. Mm-hmm. Oh, sure, says the father. There are names, lots of names, but not one of them is good enough for my daughter. Mendel, look, I love my daughter Mirla just as much as you do. But face it, she's not perfect. She's a wonderful girl with a heart of gold. She was not top in her class, far from it. She's a bit heavy. Okay. And no matter how much we try, like we've paid a lot of money to dermatologists, she can't get rid of her acne. Okay? On top to boot, we're pretty simple people. You know, we're not, Rashka Bahags. I never served as president of my congregation. I'm not the chief rabbi's grandson, the head of the left wing. Forget it. And besides, we don't have any big yichus in our family. We can't pay much for a dowry. We cannot provide our daughter with a 5-star wedding in a fancy hall. Maybe you're not being realistic. Nonsense, Malka! I wish I could act this out. Right? These things aren't important. A few pimples, a couple extra pounds. She's a treasure. I won't settle anything for anything less than the top boy in the top yeshiva from the family of a Rosh Yeshiva. And therefore, we got to nudge the shot. I don't know. I find this a little painful. If you take a look at page 12... And with this, we'll wrap it up for tonight. You'll let me know if you want to continue on this topic. Otherwise, I have a lot to say about marriage. In any event, okay, don't we tend to have an exaggerated image of ourselves, and maybe even more so of our children? In other words, we're very good at finding faults in others, right? He's no good because, you know, his father's Dr. Rashiva, or because his grandfather, you know, was a gambler. No, I'm just kidding. And we can't find faults in our own. And as we said at the outset, the Gemara in Yevamos that says Nesiv Darga. What does the Gemara mean when it says Nesiv Darga? Go below your level. What it means is that every human being is a complex person, made up of so many different personalities and sides and dimensions and midos and what have you. Mm-hmm. No one's perfect. Everyone has their ups and their downs, their pluses and their minuses. So you may find that this suggestion doesn't fit every single thing on your list. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't mean that that's not a suitable marriage partner. Why do you reject this outright? But my friends, you know what bothers me the most about this story?
Contradicts the Rambam that you...
Well, we'll get to the Rambam too, but just intuitively, what I sense here is an overbearing father. I may be wrong. Again, I'm not. This is not the end. I belong to the father's club, you understand? And the grandfather's club too. But nevertheless, in this case, you know what? I think again, as we discussed earlier, the father is not so much interested in the good for his daughter. I don't know if that's primary on his concern list. I have a feeling, again, this is just my psychiatric mind going here, that the father just cares about himself. And I think in Shidduchim, this is a serious problem when you have your own exaggerated view of yourself, for sure, that's a problem. But moreover, when you have someone controlling your life, an overbearing parent, who's going to decide who you can go out with and who you can't go out with.
The question is, where is the girl in all of this? Right?
I have a feeling that the problem with the girl is that she's letting dad take care of it all. And at some point, she's got to cut the umbilical cord. And she's got to stand up independent again. Put keep it afeim aside. We discussed keep it afeim a few weeks ago. And I told you that when it comes to Shidduchim, there is no keep it afeim. You've got to stand up and bat for yourself. And I have a strong suspicion that, and I think the mother is also on my team in this case, that many of the shidduchim that were suggested for this girl would be absolutely appropriate. I don't say that it would match. I don't say it wouldn't match, but give it a try. And the father is yelling and crying about the fact that no shidduchim are being offered for his daughter.
Right. Rabbi, there could be two angles.
No shidduchim. Right. See, I counted 25 in your list. No shidduchim. Okay, we'll stop here. If anyone wants to discuss this further, please stick around. I don't know if there's going to be Myriv now. If,
that would be nice, yeah.
We do have Minyan?
Yeah, there's somebody outside.
Okay, so if we can get together Minyan, that would be great.
Yeah, we definitely can.
Okay. What were you saying, Tom?
Basically, I think page 11 is a... I understand from where you're coming from, but it's also a setup on a translation. Because basically, it's probably an easier way for us to look at it and say, that could be ourselves putting up things. And you could actually have angels over one side and the other side. You know these television programs where you have somebody speaking from one side and the other side? In other words, one could be saying like the mom and one could be saying like the dad on the other side, and it's the person themselves that are actually doing it and blocking things off, saying, you know, in one way or another, blocking things purposely themselves for a lot of other reasons too. But also,
so what's your point that she's, that the daughter is also...
It could be instead of them, it could be the daughter doing this. And actually, it could also be the father that's used as an excuse along these lines.
Because could be. Again, I think, Tom, the difference between me and you is that you're reading this as literature, meaning you're embellishing it. I'm just, you know, trying to get to a point. I see in each one of these scenarios a message about how we should respond to inquiries and questions about Shidduchim.
But it's very...
And again, if I would summarize everything we've been saying in two sentences, number one, it's a gigantic mitzvah, but number two, the responsibility is awesome because it requires this balancing act.
It's very
two
difficult.
Two sides of the scale, and there's going to be a lot of gray area right down the middle. That's what Steve was asking me. What information am I obligated to divulge? What information am I obligated to conceal? And what is the middle ground where if they ask me, then I have to be truthful? But you know what? If they don't ask me,
here's a deeper
I don't have to.
Here's a deeper problem that you have. When I'm looking at this kind of thing, and from the beginning, what threw me was that basically there's a problem, because if you know somebody, right, that has psychological or psychiatric, serious psychiatric difficulties, so do you say, do you just ignore them or whatever and kind of just keep on letting them live life, but at the same time, don't fix them up with anybody, keep them...
No, I think all the same time,
do you give an opportunity?
Because this is not something that you want to play with. You're playing with fire.
You're right.
It doesn't mean that
you're 100%.
It doesn't mean that maybe she's also got very big issues, major issues.
No, that's true.
Let her go through the step-by-step process of checking in for her.
Right.
Maybe he's out of it. Maybe he's in remission. A person suffers from a deadly disease that might even be hereditary. Do you want to conceal that information from someone? Or do you want to say, look, these are the facts on the ground.
Yeah.
Go check it out. Speak to a physician.
This is in our community, this is one of the challenges that amongst people where we actually can come out and say things. And the question is, when do you say things and not? Is it community property that they just know that a particular person has certain types of issues that we're aware of, or at some point
we're going to talk
when
about
they start dating,
private,
it's
something.
There's a lot of challenges.
Right? How often is going to the friendship between things that are public knowledge and things that are private knowledge?
When people are
the halakha is going to reflect where they ask you certain questions they didn't ask you.
Right.
But ultimately, we're going to try to define when
do
is
break
it that I'm obligated to give the information.
Right.
Can we define
it? When people are in a relationship, right, they're heading towards marriage, do you just at some point say, okay, enough is enough? I got to break this thing apart because it's going to create
problems.
I'm looking at this thing.
Okay.
I'm saying
you want to calm down.
We actually have this in our community.